are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening? And welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Tuesday, January 29th. And from the thumb to the best record in the NBA. That's right. This is your boy, Matt Shook, a sports writer here in the Motor City covering the NBA for the Associated Press and the Detroit News. Pistons fan and follower my whole life, a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Thanks for taking the time. Thanks for spreading the word. Appreciate it. Today, I have some trade deadline thoughts and also some Anthony Davis thoughts dominating the NBA news cycle on Monday. We also have an exclusive interview with John Horst, the Milwaukee Bucks general manager of Sandusky, Michigan, who played at Rochester College. He's my age, basically. I'm actually a few months older than he is. Not depressing at all. But I talked to John for a Detroit news story that's running in Tuesday's paper. It went online even as I tape this late here on Monday night. So check that out at detnews.com. Go pick up a print edition of the paper as well. Really appreciate you guys doing that. I had a lot of fun doing that story, catching up with some of the people in John's life as well. I met with them, John and his folks, when the Bucks were in town last month, and they are back in town for the final meeting between the teams tonight at Little Caesars Arena, 7 o'clock game. But give me a follow on Twitter at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that. Also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account at Locked On Pistons, and check us out at Facebook at Locked On Pistons-Matt Shook. Really appreciate you guys doing that as well. No show on Monday, I apologize for that. A mix of being busy with this story and some other stories. Also the weather, I'll blame some of it on that. And just my own general incompetence, I'll blame another section of it on that. So I apologize for no podcast on a Monday. On trade season, I know that's going to be tough. And a warning that this is going to be a little bit of an irregular week. Not quite sure exactly what that means, but I'm pretty busy this week. I'm covering the Motor City Open Squash Tournament at Birmingham Athletic Club. Excited for that, actually. And I'm going to be catching up on these games as I can. Might be some late nights, might be some situations where I'm just kind of reading off the box score, didn't see the games this week. So we'll see how it goes, but just have a little patience with me. We know that at this point in the season, the trade deadline matters more than the games anyway. So really not that consequential, I guess. I know we're right before the trade deadline, but I mean, and I saw that Rod wrote something about how, you know, 5 games left, this could be a big thing for the franchise. If the front office hasn't decided on a path or a strategy for the front off for the trade deadline yet on February 7th, then God help them. So hopefully I think they've already made those decisions, whatever those decisions would be. And we'll kind of not let these next 5 games let them decide whether this team's worthy of a buy or something like that. But anyway, Pistons at 21-27, 2.5 games out of the playoffs, 6.5-point dogs at home to the Bucks tonight. You saw the Pistons lose to Dallas on Friday. You saw it just like I did. Blake was great. Luka was great. Drummond was pretty good. Came back off the concussion, missed 3 games, and then plus most of another 4th game as well, but came back, played pretty well, 23-19, something like that. But he did get dunked down by DeAndre Jordan and then got his dunk blocked by Maxi Kleber in the last couple minutes, which pretty much closed any chances of the Pistons making a comeback. Then while Kleber, by the way, turned into like a mix of Bill Russell and Larry Bird in the 4th quarter. So that was good times to see the Pistons kind of fold down the stretch like that. And not all Andre Drummond's fault, of course, but you know, not a great showing for him and those things that were, you might need him to spark you and make one of those big plays at the end. But he did play well, so we're not going to give this one all to Andre. But let's talk a little bit about Anthony Davis. Davis, through Rich Paul of Clutch Sports, comes out publicly on Monday and says he's not going to sign the Supermax extension with the New Orleans Pelicans after next season, making the February 7th trade deadline even more fun for most of you guys, forcing the Lakers' hands because Boston can't make a move for him until after July 1st because there's an obscure rule where you can't have 2 max designated player contracts that. And I believe that's 2 max designated player contracts of guys who earned that designation while they were with another team. I believe that that's part of it. I did not look that up, but I think that's the reason. Kind of an obscure rule, and Kyrie's already on there after getting that done with the Cavs. So you can't have 2 of them at the same time. But then obviously Kyrie would be working under his new contract as a free agent this year. So that's, I believe that's what it is. Anyway, had a couple of thoughts on this Anthony Davis and more about the discussion about Anthony Davis and how it pertains to the Pistons as well. My first one's the rational take, then I got the fan take, and then I got the old man take. You know, I always got that. So first one's the rational take, And that is that this is another indication that the Pistons should probably just build around Blake Griffin. It emboldens that claim. And a little bit in some corners of the theory of the Pistons on February 7th to kind of embolden the conservative approach during this trade deadline. But that's not exactly what I'm saying. I will add this to that, that not only should they build around Blake Griffin, but I would say aggressively build around Blake Griffin. You have one of the top 15 players in the league, maybe 20, I don't know. But this season, he's certainly that. In my opinion, is if you have a guy who's well into his prime, for all the complaining about Blake Griffin's contract, looking at Anthony Davis' situation across the league, I know Davis is younger and better, but there's some comparisons there. You have him for the next 3 years, and as much as we bitched about that and complained about that in the past, now we're realizing, that's a good thing to have Blake Griffin, to have one of the best players in the league for 3 years with a window there. So again, the window is important, and I've said this before, I almost think a conservative approach of making moves around the margins, being patient and letting Andre, maybe expire in another couple years, Reggie Jackson expire after next year. I think that's almost the worst idea than blowing the whole thing up or making an aggressive move, taking another swing on a guy like Mike Conley. It worked with Griffin. The Pistons made that swing at a guy bought low on a guy with some injury history, a proud guy with a Midwest history who, obviously Conley's a better defensive player in his younger, healthy days than even Blake Griffin was. And maybe Conley can kind of be that rejuvenated player. We know the Achilles injury is tough, but he's playing really well this year, recovering from it, probably further along than most people thought he would be in year one. And a prideful guy who's really never had his due as an NBA player, has never made an All-Star game despite being one of the top, 6, 7, 8 point guards throughout his prime, which I know he's climbing out of, but that's what they said the same thing about Blake Griffin before. And again, is this definitely going to work? No, absolutely not. But it's the kind of trade that you might have to desperately make if you want to really do something with Blake Griffin's prime here. And the Anthony Davis, getting out of a small market like New Orleans kind of just shows you that maybe you could take that swing when you have that, halfway to a good team with Blake Griffin. Maybe you do swallow a Chandler Parsons in that deal to get rid of Reggie Jackson. Let me just throw that out there too as well. My fan take is this. It's, as the players are shifting to the Lakers and the Celtics and the power teams and the Miami Heats in the past, and this is nothing new, obviously, but it's another demonstration of the kind of theme that I've talked about with the Detroit Pistons over the years, is that you're not like every other organization. And you are like a lot of these small market organizations. Now, I know Detroit's not a small market, but in terms of the NBA landscape, in terms of attracting free agents, it's, mid-range market at best. Yeah, and we like to think that there's a lot of history with the Bad Boys and the going-to-work teams that would attract people. I don't think that's necessarily true. I don't think this generation kind of gravitates to that kind of thing. So I'm just saying it kind of lends more credence to my idea that we need to just embrace what we are as the Detroit Pistons, build around that defense, build around dudes that have been written off throughout their career. It's the way that this team has won in the past, being the toughest team on the court, and it might be the only way that this team is ever going to win. The superstar dance where some of you guys want to tank and get a chance of the next Zion 3 years from now, and maybe he's going to work out, or maybe he's going to be Darko. We don't know. We'll roll the dice. But the Anthony Davis situation shows that even if you get a generational talent and you're New Orleans and you're, Detroit's kind of in the same boat, you're probably just going to lose him anyway. He's probably going to go somewhere else. So this tanking, this superstar dance, I don't want to play it. I just don't want to do it. To me, find the tough players, identify guys that are of the Detroit Pistons mold, and don't let guys wear the uniform that aren't those types of players. So whatever form that's possible, I know you can't have the Bad Boys out there taking Jordan's legs out, but whatever form that even works in today's league, as far as being physical, as far as being tough, as far as being defensive minded, continue on that. My other third thought from the Anthony Davis stuff, and this is my old man talk, is that this sucks. It doesn't it. Fake trade season, and I know if you look at Rod Beard and you look at Vince Ellis, those guys are not enjoying their trade deadline, and I understand it because it's a fan base that everyone's kind of splintered around, you know, which it's not who's your favorite Piston. It's what Piston do you hate the most? That's where we're at right now with this fan base, not blaming a single fan as it's been 10 years of crap. We all know that. And again, I'll be honest. I'm not the guy to come to about your fake trades. And I don't mean to offend anyone on that. It's more my problem than yours. And the reason that I'm not the guy to come to on your fake trade is that I will tell you exactly what I think about your fake trade. And my answer to it is yes, the Pistons should do your fake trade. If it involves Andre Drummond or Reggie Jackson, I'll take it. Let's do it. I don't even care what we get. And I mean, I'm kidding a little bit. But I'm tired of watching, you know, Blake drag Reggie and Andre Drummond for 50 games right now. And we're talking about years for Andre Drummond. And again, he's a good player. He's a very good player. He deserved his all-star appearances. He's probably going to blossom in his next situation. He does a lot of things well on the basketball court. Maybe being humbled to the point where he figures out that, oh, you know, maybe we don't need hook shots. And obviously a lot of that falls on Dwayne Casey for continuously posting up the big man and trying to get him more opportunities offensively when it should be less opportunities. But again, and I'll take it a step further. I'm tired of listening to some of the Pistons podcasts. I'm tired of seeing a lot of you guys on Twitter, and I like all you guys. I like all the podcasts, and Pistons Twitter is mostly a good time. But, you know, the Detroit Bad Boys, they had a podcast on Monday. Again, I like all those guys. I like listening to it every week. But they're trashing every possible trade rumor. And a lot of the trade rumors are BS. We shouldn't even talk about some of these people on Twitter that are throwing trade rumors out there. But they're just means to start a discussion, really, at this point. Other than, you know, Kevin O'Connor talking about Marc Gasol and the Pistons sniffing in on that. Well, first of all, I don't think the Grizzlies would be interested in Andre Drummond, which would probably have to be the return for Marc Gasol unless you get a third team involved. But again, back to Pistons Twitter and the podcast, it's the know-it-all corner of Pistons Twitter. Probably every team is like this for the elite fans, so to speak. They're just kind of here to tell you why this doesn't work, why that doesn't work. That's a bad idea. They're going to pass on every single trade. Meanwhile, it's like nobody's coming up with solutions. To me, and again, the Charlotte rumor was probably bogus to at least some extent. If you can get Malik Monk and in a first-round pick for Drummond, all you got to do is give up Drummond and take on Batum, I'd do it in a heartbeat. We all talk about in this fan base how everyone loves Luke Kennard. Maybe the Pistons' best asset, pound for pound. Well, Blake is, but talk about Luke Kennard like he's great and then crap all over Malik Monk. Well, guess what? Malik Monk's better than Luke Kennard. Ask 29 other fan bases who they'd rather have, Malik Monk or Kennard. If you wouldn't trade for Malik Monk because you want to keep Andre Drummond's rebounding around for another few years, because the first seven of this guy's career have been so enjoyable to watch as a fan base. And guess what? If you say no to every trade, to every rumor, then you are saying yes to something. You actually are saying yes to another season of this crap, another season of this team doing this thing. And Luke Kennard's fine. I don't mean to portray Luke Kennard as the problem here, but people are talking about him like he's Luka Doncic or something like that. It's a transactional season. And again, this is another old man thought. It's like and this is not a new thought. The transactions, the trade deadline, the draft, the free agency, it's past the season in terms of what we're talking about. And it's not even like barely past it. It's all people talk about. And I'm kind of tired of it. I'm not really interested in super teams. I'm not really excited about who Anthony Davis goes and plays with. I think it's boring. I think all the players who get together and do it, they're diminishing their championships by doing it. And let's not be the worst version of trying to put those teams together. Let's just try to get a tough team out there and try to beat all these teams. I mean, I was listening to the Zach Lowe, the Lowe post about what the Lakers and Knicks and Celtics and 76ers are going to try to do to get Anthony Davis. And I know this is one of these days that you're supposed to be excited about the NBA fandom, but I'm just kind of bored with it. But anyway, up next, we got John Horst. He's going to join us for an interview that we did last month with him. But did you get a smart speaker over the holidays? Go ahead and tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked on Pistons, Amazon Alexa, Echo, any Google Home device, Sonos, whatever. Go ahead and just tell them to play podcast Locked on Pistons for the latest episode of your favorite daily Detroit Pistons podcast.
Yes, sir!
And I am very excited to be joined here by John Horst in a minute. But a couple things to know about the interview. Again, this interview was actually conducted over a month ago on December 17th. So obviously we're not going to be talking about the trade deadline or current events, not the Thon Maker rumors or anything like that. This is about John Horst. This is not really even about his much about his role as the Bucks general manager. It's about his upbringing, about growing up in Michigan's Thumb in Sandusky. Shouts out to Sanilac County up there. Also about attending Rochester College with Coach Garth Pleasant, the Hall of Famer, who is now retired and living down in Florida during the winter. His son, Clint Pleasant, now runs the show at Rochester College. Pretty cool arena, Garth Pleasant Arena. I was there to chat with Clint the other day. And also about his time working for the Pistons, too. Thought you guys might be interested to know about that. There are some things that we referred to in there that might need a little context. When John Horst talks about John, he's referring to John Hammond. He talked about him quite a bit, one of his main mentors. Now the general manager of the Orlando Magic. He worked under Joe Dumars with the Pistons as a director of basketball operations or assistant general manager or something like that, vice president. And eventually he brought Horst with him to Milwaukee when Hammond was hired in Milwaukee in 2008. Pistons have not won a playoff game since that time, by the way. Another thing is to know is this isn't, it's not going to sound great as far as podcast listening. I did not, when I was doing this interview, I didn't really plan on this going on the podcast. So I did a lot of the mm-hmms, a lot of me like reacting with the ums and mm-hms while he's giving an answer. And obviously I've trained myself not to do that for the podcast interviews, but sometimes, and in some cases, I feel like it helps when you're having a face-to-face conversation with someone to kind of keep them rolling during some of these newspaper interviews. Now, looking back, it's probably not a good idea even in those situations. Too much of it sounds weird. Probably sound like a psychopath a little bit there. But part of it is that we actually have some mutual acquaintances. A lot of the people that he talks about from growing up in the Thumb actually know a lot of these folks. So I was trying to convey that I know, you know, like I'm affirmative, like, yes, I hear you and all that kind of stuff. But as I listened to it and edited it up a little bit ago tonight, sounded strange. So I apologize for the fact that I'm kind of stepping on his answers and sounding like a lunatic. But, and also this is at Little Caesars Arena before a game. So some ambient noise there as well that you're going to have to deal with. But anyway, go ahead and enjoy the interview with John Horst of Sandusky, Michigan, who is now the general manager of the Milwaukee Bucks. What's it like being back in Sandusky?
Yeah, Sandusky's home. So yeah. For me, just like, you know, you get 15 minutes out on M19 or 46, whichever way I decided to come in, like, mm-hmm. just kind of a relaxing, comfortable feeling. Loved growing up there. Actually did a radio interview. My dad asked me to do a radio interview with Bob Armstrong, who runs a local radio station mm-hmm. there. His son Matt and I were great friends, mm-hmm. and so I did this interview, and he's asking me about, you know, education and people that are mentors, and for me, that's my foundation, my basis, starting with my family, my grandparents, my parents, and growing up on a farm and doing the things that I did there. But the education that we got at Sandusky High School for a public school in a smaller community, I think was tremendous. And there's a lot of successful students in a lot of different areas, really around the world, that have graduated from Sandusky. And coaches, you know, you and I were just talking about John Gutowski, who was a great, I think, great basketball coach and definitely a great mentor for me. And I think a lot of his former players would say that. Jim Marshall, who was my coach for a couple of years there, the same thing. Terry Reed, who was a legendary head coach at Marlette for the girls and boys, and ended up being kind of a consultant, special assistant coach for us. My last years with Jim Marshall, and he's since passed, but Terry was a tremendous mentor for me. And so, yeah, I played Barry Zeem baseball and Brad Bays and Rick Tank for football. And so there's a lot of people who've had an impact in my life along the way. When you go to Sandusky, you remember that and kind of see the houses and see the faces, and it's fun.
Did you know that you wanted to play hoops in college somewhere in Rochester? Or did you know that you wanted to go to Rochester? How did it come about that
so
you got hooked up there?
Always wanted to play basketball. Like, I mean, so you say like 3-4 years old, my dad playing in a men's league and going up and watching them, and then, you know, learning to shoot on the side on my own and dribbling all the time. That's 3-4 years old. Like, all I wanted, I was like addicted. And kind of move into 6, 7, 8 years old, start playing competitively in little rec leagues, and then, you know, junior high and playing for travel teams, and just every level. At some point you think, I want to play in the NBA, right? And then at some point you realize, like, for me anyways, I'm probably not going to play in the NBA, but I want to play in college. Like, I want to play at the highest competitive level I can. I'm just a good football player, so I had some chances to play football also. But really, the passion for basketball. And so maybe could have played at a school slightly bigger than Rochester, you know, maybe Division II, whatever. Maybe not, but for me, Rochester, at that time when I got the age, Al DeMott, who was my athletic director, and I, we sat down. I wanted to play for the best program I could play for, and I knew that I wanted to work in basketball for a long period of time, and so we had identified Rochester and a few other schools that were in that area as schools that had reached out to me, that had interest in recruiting me, they'd be a great fit. And Garth Pleasant, who was my college coach, was there for 30-plus years, was a Hall of Fame coach in the state of Michigan, had a ton of winning, and so we knew we could win there, and it was proximity. It was 20 minutes from the Palace, and so intentionally chose Rochester College, proximity to the Pistons, and the success that I could have there as a player, and it ended up working out for me.
How did it come about with the Pistons with you?
So Garth tells a story, because he's the one that made the connection, that at the end of my junior year, kind of going into that summer, John Hammond, who had a good relationship with Garth, but Garth, because of the proximity, and they would use our practice facility at Rochester sometimes when visiting teams come in, Garth had kind of an open invitation to the Pistons organization to go watch practices. He spent time with Larry Brown when Larry was there, Flip Saunders when Flip was there. And so he knew Joe and John really well. John had called him for an office intern. He said, hey, we need an office intern, someone to answer phones and lick envelopes and just kind of be in here. And Garth gave him my name. And so I was the captain of our team at Rochester, and I guess he had a great amount of respect for me. And so he came to me and said, hey, I have a great opportunity for you. You could be an intern with the Pistons. He knew what I wanted to do. We talked about it all the time. At the time, I wasn't sure if I wanted to coach or kind of work in the front office. I didn't really know what a front office was. No one does until you get into it.
High school.
So I thought I wanted to coach. But internship was a path to a professional team. And so he offered them my name and came to me, and as absolutely. And so I did my internship during my senior year. I full course credits, interned with the Pistons, and played for Rochester.
But when you were with the Pistons, and I know it's basically just taking every job and every task they give you in the front office as an intern and doing the best with it, but was there something that you gravitated towards in terms of an aspect of the job that led to John, you know, kind of taking you under his wing in some ways, or something that you developed that maybe was unique? I know analytics might be something that jumps out, but
yeah,
have focused on a lot over your time.
So it's interesting, like definitely jack of all trades and as an intern for sure, whatever anyone asks. But again, I think my passion at the time, I felt like, hey, I want to coach. And Flip Saunders was really gracious and generous for me in doing video work and helping him with different things. And some of the assistant coaches there allow me to help work players out on the floor pregame and after hours in the gym and do different stuff like that. Kind of felt like, hey, like I'm kind of setting this path. And at the same time, I was working with Tony Ronzoni and Scott Perry and George David, and the front office people, and John Hammond, helping them set schedules for scouting or doing research on players they were going to go watch. A lot of stuff that teams do all the time now, where I think we were kind of early in doing that. And I think as I dove into more project-based things for those guys, I really became, like, that was my niche. Like, super detail-oriented, love spending long hours in research and analysis and putting something from complete, you know, start to finish, and really kind of coming out with a recommendation based on research and analysis. And, and I was able to do that for those guys, and I think John saw that. I think he saw some of the projects I put together and some of the things that I did, and that kind of had him come to me, and at one point, came to me with those two things, so kind of cap and analytics, you know, because cap and analytics were not things that were done in-house in basketball front offices 10 to 12 years ago.
Okay.
And they just weren't. Like, I think there was probably a handful, like everyone that was maybe starting to explore those things, but for the most part, your cap guys or cap people were out in-house counsel, but on the business side.
Okay.
So it'd be like a business lawyer, someone that had a legal background, that you'd say, hey, like, we want to try to do this. Does it check these boxes? And so there was no one kind of in the basketball office that did that. And analytics was really kind of just a brand new thing in professional basketball.
Sure.
And so John kind of tasked me or challenged me to learn those things, to study them, and put me on them as an opportunity, maybe a niche that I could find in the organization. And that's kind of how I got
it. Identify some people that are good at it that you could bring along and all that kind of stuff as well. What about the decision to go to Milwaukee with John? I'm assuming you're a Pistons fan probably growing up, I would imagine. And so, you know, but you probably saw a pretty good opportunity of falling and getting probably a step up in the run, I would imagine, at that time.
Yeah. Hometown, so, you know, very close to home. My wife and I love the Oakland County area. Joe Dumars, a tremendous mentor, mm-hmm. still a very close friend and someone mm-hmm. who I rely on a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, he opened his organization to me and really mm-hmm. gave me freedom and autonomy to learn and do things that maybe not everyone else would get a chance to do. And so mm-hmm. I was incredibly grateful to him. And you have to put it into context that in my 3.5 years there with Flip Saunders, we'd won 55 plus games every year and it went to the Eastern Conference Finals. And we were literally on the verge of finishing, I don't remember off the top of my head, but the 07-08 season, probably like 56, 57 wins. Mm-hmm. And like going, like ended up being in the Conference Finals again, lost yeah. to Cleveland in the Conference Finals. Mm-hmm. So like a tremendous amount of success mm-hmm. and like a vibe in the city and 100 mm-hmm. straight sellouts and all this stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Add all that on to what my feelings were for Joe when John came to me with the opportunity to go. Tough decision, but I felt like an opportunity to grow, to challenge mm-hmm. myself, to explore something different. I'd never been to Milwaukee in my life, mm-hmm. never been to the state of Wisconsin in my life, as far as I know. But and it's not that far, but yeah. you know, for me, like a whole different organization and different opportunity. Mm-hmm. As I don't remember exactly, so 2008. I'm trying to think how old I was. So 25 years old, 24 years old, I think, mm-hmm. when I took the job.
Yeah.
So really young yeah. to like take this big career shift into another organization. Director of basketball operations.
Okay.
And so that was it. Like mm-hmm. the trust and the relationship I have with John as a personal professional mentor mm-hmm. in my life, unlike any other.
Mm-hmm.
And the opportunity to grow and stretch and be uncomfortable and do something different and have a bigger role is why
were
I left.
You already married?
Yeah, my wife and I just got married. Maybe 8 months before that, 9 mm-hmm. months before that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, but no kids yet.
No kids, mm-hmm. just two of us, yeah.
So the two of you guys just went to Milwaukee?
We did. She stayed, so she got her bachelor's from Rochester and her mm-hmm. master's from Oakland University.
Okay.
So she was finishing her master's program mm-hmm. at Oakland, so she came like 3 or 4 months after, mm-hmm.
okay.
after I came.
Great. Yeah. And then kind of another, you know, the uncertainty when John and obviously you're kind of under a little bit of uncertainty. This position's open now. No guarantees there, obviously.
Yeah.
What was that kind of like for you? Probably looking around, maybe at Orlando, maybe at some other places too.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Yeah, so Jeff Waltman had left, I don't remember the year exactly, but 3 or 4 years, okay. maybe 5 years prior mm-hmm. to Toronto Raptors.
Okay.
So Jeff
yeah.
was part of the rebuild in Toronto and helped okay. them get to where they are with mm-hmm. Masai Ujiri
yeah.
There and then became the president of Orlando. So mm-hmm. Jeff, John, and I came to Milwaukee from Detroit together.
Yeah. He was only there for a little bit.
He was there for like, I want to say 4 years, five
okay.
years,
mm-hmm.
And then he went to Toronto.
Okay.
So Jeff was another one mm-hmm. of the main influences in my life. I learned mm-hmm. a ton from him. He was the assistant GM in Milwaukee.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So then when John went to join him and kind of everything was going on here, you know, ultimately opportunity in, like a potential opportunity could have been in Orlando mm-hmm. to, you know, have a role maybe with those guys, who knows,
maybe, yeah.
But you would think possibly was enticing and exciting, but mm-hmm. really for a chance to stay with Milwaukee.
Sure.
To work for the ownership group that I get to work for, Wes, Mark, and Jamie, mm-hmm. and Mike Fascitelli, mm-hmm. who are tremendous people, and I learn from them every day, and they mm-hmm. challenge me every day. And they would, whether I was in the role I'm in now or if I stayed in the same role I was in then.
Yeah.
The relationships I had with them and just the ability to learn day in and day out from them
mm-hmm.
and to be with Giannis. And, you know, Milwaukee was our home. Those things were a huge factor in
sure.
being really comfortable and trying to stay with the organization.
Mm-hmm.
Ended up being able to stay as general manager. So
when you're around here and even back home yesterday, do you take a minute and say, holy crap, like, can you believe, you know, like, this,
yeah.
this is quite a ride that you've been
yeah.
on as someone who's your age that has kind of seen this like kind of all develop. Do you ever take time to think about that? And
all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think for me, so 14 years in the NBA, and I'm 35 years old, this is all I've ever done.
Mm-hmm.
And to have, I mean, I had different jobs
mm-hmm.
along the way to help support my mm-hmm. NBA dream.
Mm-hmm.
But from a career standpoint and a passion, this is the only thing I've ever done for
mm-hmm.
work. And that alone, no matter what role I'm in, is remarkable and
mm-hmm.
exceptional to me and something that I feel blessed every day. So
mm-hmm.
to then be a general manager, to be running the basketball portion of a franchise
mm-hmm.
and to do what I do on a daily basis to challenge myself is, you know, I think, a once-in-a-life opportunity that I try every day to be thankful for and grateful for and maximize while I have it. You never know how long you're going to have these opportunities. And I'm also not afraid of that. I'm not afraid of what could be. Try to live in the moment every day and be great at it every day and surround myself with great people. And I learned this from Joe and John. They used to always say, Joe when we were in Detroit, John when we were in Milwaukee. like the goal is to win as much as you can and be around great people. Mm-hmm. So like that's what I try to do.
Yeah, but you were unpaid for a while with the Pistons, and you were doing all sorts of different jobs. Is that maybe one of the lessons that you like to, when you're talking to young people or something like that, that the, you know, don't be afraid to do something for something else or that kind of thing? I mean, is that kind of a lesson that you like to give the people as well?
100%. So for me, the work ethic, I think, is an ability to kind of willingness to do anything to get to where you want. Learn from my parents and my grandparents, 100%, is kind of that farmer mentality and just figure out how to do it yourself and, you know, do the best you can. Grandpa, if it's in, if you don't do it well, then why do it at all, right? And so that mentality for sure, but like for me, to do, I always tell the young people, like, do anything you can to be in that in the role that you want to be. And so the sacrifice of working at FedEx Ground or working at a trailer park or stacking shelves at Bed Bath Beyond to make money while I was doing what I wanted to do. What I wanted to do was work in basketball and had an opportunity to work for a professional sports franchise. That's the highest level you can be in the sport that I wanted to be. And so my fear factor or my drive was, I gotta stick here as long as I can, and so what can I do to support that? And so that's why I did those things, and I do tell young people that. I also tell them, like, my goal was never to work for the Detroit Pistons as much as it was to work in basketball. So I tell them, like, whatever opportunity is in sport, like, get that and maximize it, you know? So I worked at Oakland Yard, you know, I don't know the Oakland Yard facility. So I worked at Oakland Yard in facilities there, running camps. I ran basketball camps at Bayshore basketball camps. I did a variety of things in the world. I worked at YMCA. Youth leagues, reffing and coaching. I tried to do anything I could in sports to be in sports and learn opportunities and experiences. Like, it could have just as easily been a managing position at YMCA, right?
Yep.
I was doing an internship for the Pistons, and maybe they offered me to be a manager at YMCA, or maybe I could have gotten some position as a supervisor at Oakland Yard, or whatever it was.
Yeah.
My passion, my goal was to work in sports, and it luckily happened to be the Detroit Pistons.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the willingness to do anything is really key. John Hammond was always general manager, and Joe, obviously, and like that group of people in teaching me how to, I think, do this job and hopefully do it well. Learned a tremendous amount from each of them differently and individually. And Garth, as my college coach for 4 years, in the program that he runs and the things that he instills in young people there, like, beyond grateful for not only just like the role that I have and teaching me different things, but also just as a person, as a father, as a husband. Like, Garth is very instrumental in my path so far.
John Horst of the Milwaukee Bucks, good dude. Thanks to him for taking the time, and thanks to you guys for listening to the Locked On Pistons podcast. We'll be back, like I said, with another strange schedule this week for me with all the work stuff. So you, maybe the podcast will be up the rest of the week, first thing in the morning, hopeful, but possible that may not be the case. And also let me know what you guys think on the Google Voice line. We could use your opinions this week to make my job a little easier with the podcast and all the other stuff I have going on. So call us up at 810-666-1546. Again, that's 810-666-1546. And leave us a voicemail about the trade deadline, about John Horst, about anything you want to react to. Leave your name and where you live as well. And just keep it short, you know, 45 seconds, maybe 2 minutes if you're feeling good. But let us know what you think. And appreciate you guys for doing that. This is your host, Matt Shook, saying thanks for listening and talk to you guys tomorrow.